Producer Jackson Nguyen Dan Nhi. I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. More than 568,000 people have died from COVID-19 globally. That figure is more than 135,000 in the United States. The number of confirmed infections is now more than 12.8 million globally and more than 3.3 million in the U.S. With the United States grappling with the worst coronavirus outbreak in the world, Florida hit a grim milestone Sunday, shattering the national record for a state's largest single-day increase in positive coronavirus cases. Meanwhile, countries in Eastern Europe are facing rising waves of coronavirus infections, leading to riots in Serbia, mandatory face masks in Croatia, and travel bans or quarantines imposed by Hungary. The new restrictions come as the World Health Organization reports that daily global infections hit over 228,000 and the U.S. confirmed over 66,000 new cases on Friday, another record. The U.S. state of Florida on Sunday reported the largest single-day increase in positive coronavirus cases in any one state since the beginning of the pandemic. According to the State Department of Health statistics released Sunday, by the end of reporting, more than 15,000 people tested positive. The state of California had the previous record of daily positive cases 4 days before. As coronavirus rages out of control in other parts of the U.S., New York is offering an example after taming the nation's deadliest outbreak this spring, while there are those trying to prepare in case another surge comes. The New York's early experience is a ready-made blueprint for states now finding themselves swamped by the disease. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The Chinese National Health Authority said Monday that the mainland China reported 8 new COVID-19 cases as the end of July 12th, up from 7 reported a day earlier. The National Health Commission said in a statement that all the new cases were imported infections involving travelers from overseas, the same as the 7 days earlier. The capital, Beijing, reported no new deaths for the seventh consecutive day. U.S. President Donald Trump has criticized a privately built border wall in South Texas that shows signs of erosion months after going up, saying in a tweet that he thinks it was only done to make him look bad, even though it was built after a months-long campaign by his supporters. The group that raised money online for it promoted itself as supporting Mr. Trump during a government shutdown that began in December of 2018 because Congress wouldn't fund a border wall. Mr. Trump's tweet said on Sunday that he came after ProPublica Texas Tribune reported that they found the riverbank had started to erode. A Republican governor who's rumored to be eyeing a run for the White House in 2024 says the GOP needs to be a bigger tent party after President Trump leaves office. Maryland's Larry Hogan has been known to break with Mr. Trump, and Hogan is also raising questions now about Trump commutation of political ally Roger Stone's prison sentence. Hogan tells NBC's Meet the Press that he doesn't know what the future holds in November, but he says the party is going to be looking at what happens to President Trump and whether that's in 4 months or 4 years. Sudan has passed laws banning female genital mutilation and allowing non-Muslims to consume alcohol. The move appears to be a reversal of nearly four decades of hardline Islamist policies which limited the freedoms of women. Along with banning the female genital mutilation, Sudan's Sovereign Council last week reversed the law which formerly required women to have a permit from a male family member to travel with their children. While women's rights advocates celebrated the long-awaited decision, they warned that the practice of FGM remains culturally entrenched in Sudan, A 2014 survey backed by the United Nations found that 87% of Sudanese women and girls between the ages of 15 and 49 have been subjected to the procedure. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Monday, July 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Opposition and pro-democracy groups in Mali have turned down President Keita's latest conciliatory offer.
The fact that he just stormed in a place of worship and killed people, we are not ready to compromise. So we believe that at this point, it is too late. We are into this until he resigns.
Uganda religious leaders appeal for reopening places of worship. An official says the resignation of DRC Justice Minister is necessary to save the current ruling coalition. We'll tell you why Basotho prefer monarchy over democracy. And a look at a possible successor to the late Ivory Coast Prime Minister Koulibaly.
People are thinking about Patrick Achi. He was the member of the PDCI, of Ubonye's party, so that Patrick Achi could be the Prime Minister of Ivory Coast to succeed the late Prime Minister Amadou Gonkoulibaly.
Nyanka Lakwoke is Assistant Professor of History and Pan-Africana Studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Opposition and pro-democracy groups in Mali have turned down President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta's latest conciliatory offer. They say they will continue their protest until the president resigns. Mr. Keïta offered over the weekend to dissolve the Constitutional Court and implement some of the recommendations made by the Economic Community of West Africa's ECOWAS. Dr. Ramata Sissoko Cisse, president of the Change in Mali movement, says the killing of protesters has erased any chance for reconciliation, and now the president must step down.
We are still counting to see if people who are being hurt during the storm on the mosque, which is supposed to be a place of worship where they attack peaceful protesters who are just having meetings, we're still waiting for them. So from Friday to Saturday, 2 days, so we had the funeral of about 17 of those people today.
President Keita, I think he made some, concessions on Saturday evening by agreeing to withdraw the appointments he made to the Constitutional Court. Why can't the opposition accept that?
Because that's not our request. We requested him to resign because from the first day, the person that he's trying to dismiss from the Constitutional Court was the one who declared him winner of the election that everybody knows he didn't win. So to dismiss that person for us is just a political move to save himself when we know that he is the problem. We're not targeting president of the Constitutional Court. We are targeting him because we believe he has been elected during a fraudulent election, and we want to make sure that he understands that he needs to step down.
Now, where do you think things are going? Because some people were even suggesting that this crisis is heading towards a possible civil war. That's ominous because Mali is already being destabilized by Islamist insurgents.
Yes, we believe that the fact that he has been here for 7 years with a government who was incapable to satisfy the need of the population, that alone was sufficient for him to resign. Now that he went over to even give an order to shoot on peaceful demonstrator, that's even one more reason why we believe that there is no room for negotiation at this point. It is the people of Mali who are demanding his resignation. Over 90% of people do not believe in this government, never believed in it. And today, they're more resilient than ever. So to save lives, he just needs to accept that he is not recognized by the majority of Malians, and he needs to just make a decision, a wise decision, to resign and let the people of Mali decide for the future of Mali.
So, Dr. Cisse, as the crisis in Mali enter another week, is there a possible compromise that people can look at least from the opposition side?
The only compromise right now is what happens to him after he resigns. He arbitrarily arrested and kidnapped many opposition leaders and civil society members And we believe that this is just a violation of human rights that cannot be tolerated. Remember, Mali is a very old country. We had a constitution since the 13th century. So we are an old country. We know human rights, constitution, law and order. We are used to it. We're not used to violence. And the fact that he just stormed in a place of worship and killed people, we are not ready to compromise. So we believe that at this point, it is too late. We are into this until he resigns. There's no way we're going to be compromising anything.
Dr. Oramata Sissoko Cisse is the president of the Change in Mali movement. She was speaking with us from Lawrenceville, Georgia. The funeral of Ivory Coast Prime Minister Amadou Gon Coulibaly will take place this Friday, July 17, at the conclusion of an 8-day national mourning. However, the country will begin paying tribute to the late Coulibaly starting tomorrow, July 14. The late Coulibaly was also the candidate for the ruling Rally of Republicans Party to succeed President Alassane Ouattara. As the country mourns, the debate for a successor to the late Coulibaly has begun. Patrick Aki, press secretary to President Ouattara, squashed rumors on Sunday that he had been appointed to succeed Mr. Coulibaly as prime minister. Nyanka Lagoke, assistant professor of history and Pan-Africana studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, says Patrick Aki has a chance of succeeding the late Coulibaly.
People are thinking about Patrick Aki. He was the member of the PDCI, Ufubonye's party, and then he moved away from his party, led today by Andy Konambidi, who was in a political covenant with Ouattara, and now who is having some dissension with Mr. Ouattara, so that Patrick Aki could be the prime minister of Ivory Coast to succeed the late prime minister Amadou Gon Coulibaly. People also think that Ahmed Bakayoko, the minister of defense, could also, because he was the one who was interim prime minister when Mr. Gon was sick and was in Paris. Now, if Patrick Aki was to be chosen, this can create a further tension and dissension between Mr. Ouattara and then Ahmed Bakayoko, his minister of defense, because Ahmed Bakayoko thinks that he's the rightful successor to Gon Coulibaly to become the prime minister of Ivory Coast.
What about President Ouattara? Because I think sometime last week or over the weekend, there were talks in the ruling party that perhaps President Ouattara should be drafted to take over.
We knew that Mr. Ouattara was seeking it like a third term. Everyone knows that in Ivory Coast. And then he even changed the constitution, the 2000 constitution, like another constitution in 2015-16. And then there was an age limit, so they removed the age limit. So we knew that that was a possibility for him to run because Alassane Ouattara is 78. But the Europeans, the international community who put him, they who backed him, many of them did not want him to look for that third term. And this is how he chose Gon Coulibaly.
How does all this impact the opposition ahead of the October election, particularly the party of former President Laurent Gbagbo and that of Guillaume Soro?
Guillaume Soro, if he was not moved by ego, and if just Guillaume Soro has played well, if he had like a greater sense of politics, Guillaume Soro would not have confronted Ouattara the way he did. For him to be pushed to resign from Ouattara's party and to find himself in exile in France. Because as you know, they raised the rebellion together, and Soro Guillaume was the legitimate leader of the rebellion whose godfather is Mr. Alassane Draman Ouattara. When the election was disputed in 2010, they resorted to violence to make Alassane Ouattara the effective president of the Ivory Coast. Now, Soro Guillaume, maybe, I know, I read something that he might have written talking about divine justice, but we're not going to talk about divine justice because no one knows what will happen to any of us. So he may be content, but it's not about an individual, it's a system. And Ouattara is the one who represents that system, and Ouattara is still there. I don't know how Soro Guillaume is making progress with the death of Amadou Gon Coulibaly. Talking about Gbagbo, Gbagbo wants to come back. He's free. He has the right to come back, but Mr. Ouattara does not want Gbagbo to come back to go back to Ivory Coast, because if Gbagbo is there, then he's going to change, mess up his plan that he's putting into place for him to remain in power, or if he leaves power, for his system to still endure, even if he decides not to be the president of Ivory Coast.
We do appreciate very much your analysis. Thank you very much, always.
Thank you very much, James.
Nyaka Lagoke is Assistant Professor of History and Pan-Africana Studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. An official of former Democratic Republic of Congo President Joseph Kabila's coalition says the resignation of Justice Minister Celestin Ntunda over the weekend was a strategic decision by Mr. Kabila's FCC coalition in order to save the current ruling coalition of President Felix Tshisekedi's CACH alliance and Mr. Kabila's FCC. Andre Alain Atundu says it would have been awkward for President Tshisekedi to preside over a cabinet meeting with Mr. Ntunda present. The former justice minister had a disagreement with President Tshisekedi earlier this month when the former justice minister proposed that his justice ministry be given more control over criminal prosecutions. He was arrested briefly earlier this month and released. Andre Alain Atundu says the FCC asked Mr. Ntunda to resign to preserve the coalition.
I think it's a strategical decision of FCC, of Kabila side. This was necessary in order to save the unity of our coalition. Because even Mr. Ntunda had rights, according to the president's point of view, it would not be very comfortable for President Tshisekedi to rule a meeting where Mr. Ntunda should be there. So to save the peace between our coalition, the FCC agreed to ask Mr. Ntunda to resign.
So it seems to me that the Kabila side wants to preserve the coalition, but Justice Minister or the former Justice Minister Ntunda was trying to bring about judicial reform where the civilian or the ministers can have more control. Is this okay with the FCC?
Not at all. This was not the matter. A Minister of Justice is by law the government's advice. So in his charge, he has to give government opinion without having a formal accord from the president or the prime. So he gave his opinion as advisor of the government, and this is current.
What do you know about protests by supporters of President Tshisekedi's side of the coalition, that they have been protesting the appointment of a new chair of the Elections Commission, who they say is a supporter of former President Kabila?
This is, what can I say in English? I think it's a big joke, because, first of all, to choose or to appoint the president of a national community is the job of the civil society. This is a job for opposition and majority of CIS. We have to choose the rapporteur, as we say in French, and the man in charge of treasury. So if they protest, this is the freedom that is authorized by the constitution, but it should have no aftermath according to the way Mr. Rosa was chosen.
There was a report about the NDCR rebel group in the East that they wanted to surrender to the government.
This is an old story. Every government are involved. That's what we say. But you must know that no war, no guerrilla can survive when the people or the population is against it.
Andre Alain Atundu is an official of former DRC President Joseph Kabila's party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kinshasa. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, July 13th. Religious leaders in Uganda are calling on the government to reopen places of worship. They say since some public gatherings such as markets, restaurants have been opened, places of worship too should be given a chance to reopen. But a Ministry of Health official says the government will be guided by scientific evidence to take further measures of lockdown. Mugume Davis Rakarenji's reports from Kampala.
Bishop Joshua Rele A member of Intelligence Council of Uganda and the National COVID Fund, which helps mobilize resources to fight the spread of COVID-19 in the country, says clerics have served the Minister of Health with a letter detailing their preparedness if places of worship are opened.
In these guidelines, we are going to be observing the seating arrangements that are recommended. All those details are included. They've been discussed by our committees. Each religion, we have different, the Muslims, the Anglicans, our team that developed, gave us those, and then they went, we sent them out.
Bishop David Chiganda, who heads the National Pastors Platform of Uganda, agrees. He says it is high time the government opened the churches as a way to appreciate God who has helped protect the nation since the first case of COVID-19 was announced in the country on March 21st.
God has saved us, has protected us, has healed us. In our medical vulnerability, in our health vulnerability, God has saved the Ugandans. Nobody has died. What are we expected to do? It's to glorify him, to thank him, and give him thanks by opening up his places of worship.
According to Uganda's Minister of Health, the country has 1,025 cases of COVID-19, of which 972 have since recovered and been discharged. Emmanuel Nebiona, Minister of Health spokesman, acknowledges the ministry has received a letter from religious leaders seeking permission to open. He says the ministry will come up with thorough guidelines as to when and how places of worship will be opened.
It's going to be on the risk assessment. I cannot say tomorrow, I can't say today or how long, but once there's a concrete preparation and advice from the scientific committee and also guidance from World Health Organization, that's when we will be with at least a position on lifting the lockdown measure and places of worship.
Since May, the government started easing the lockdown by opening up restaurants, food markets, and shopping malls. But many activities that attract big gatherings, such as entertainment, sports, and political rallies, have not been opened up. And the country is expected to conduct virtual campaigns in the coming elections. Religious leaders here say they have already dispatched health teams to train their members on standard operating procedures once the places of worship are opened. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The people of Lesotho, also known as Basotho, say they prefer to be ruled by a king rather than a parliamentary democracy. This, according to the latest survey conducted by Afrobarometer, the Pan-African Non-Partisan Research Group. Puleng Adams, Afrobarometer representative for Lesotho, says 66% of Basotho wants to do away with elections and parliament and let the king be their sole ruler. She said the survey was conducted early 2020 and came in the wake of a period of political instability in Lesotho, including government collapses. Adams said Basotho see their king as non-controversial.
According to our survey, two-thirds of Basotho say that elections and parliament should be abolished so that the king can govern the country. This includes those who said they approve strongly and who said that they disapprove. This sentiment is particularly strong among the youngest of the respondents, that is between 18 and 25. That is 71% of them believe so. This percentage is followed by women and those that don't affiliate to any political party at 71%, women 70%. Among the respondents, only 49% of those were post-secondary education catered respondents.
Lesotho, in the past year or two, was embroiled in this political conflict with former Prime Minister Thabane. When was the survey conducted? During that political turmoil or after?
It was carried out in February, March of this year.
So is it possible to say that the findings or the results are influenced by what was going on in politics at that time?
Certainly. And I wonder if we carried another survey right now with a similar question. I think that the trust on parliament and other institutions would score even worse because of things that have been happening within parliament and the commotion right now is the same ABC party.
Some Basotho said the country went into politics because they felt that the kings failed them. Why do you think they are yearning now to go back to monarchy?
Yeah, that same question was asked when we were making our presentation. The likely answer would be that the country has been very, very unstable for many, many years. And they feel that, well, I mean, from 93, there was this thing called democracy. Democracy has not worked for us. We're still very poor. Politicians are the ones who are rich. They have all kinds of allowances. They're not poor. The rest of the country, especially young people, are poor. They have no jobs. And maybe we should try something else.
I was asking this question because in neighboring Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, people there are yearning for democracy because they say that the monarchy under King Mswati III, that the country lacks freedom of speech and assembly. So it's kind of interesting that people, okay. Basotho people, will be yearning for a return to monarchy.
Okay, the king in Swaziland is an absolute monarch. Whereas here, we have a constitutional monarch. Our king here is confined to advice by the prime minister. The law does not allow him to do... I mean, the system is different to that one of Eswatini. So maybe also the desire to have the king play a more prominent role in our politics here is also because our king does not feature a lot in politics as it is. And when he does feature... There's no controversy when it comes to our king right now.
Puleng Adams is the Afrobarometer representative for Lesotho. She was speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the Ultimate Fighting Championship welterweight champion, Nigerian mixed martial artist Kamaru Usman, who successfully defended his belt for the second time by defeating George Masvidal via unanimous decision in the main event of the UFC 251 on Sunday. The Nigerian Nightmare, as he's often referred to, beat Masvidal at the Yash Island in Abu Dhabi by 50-45, 50-45, and 49-46 judges' decision to retain his crown. The welterweight champion Kamaru Usman, in his post-fight press conference, said his victory was well-deserved.
I'm at the top of the mountain. I'm the champion. Everybody's looking at me. So there's never going to be a shortage of contenders, guys trying to challenge for the title. First and foremost, I've been training for a long time, since February. This fight was supposed to happen in April,
right.
May, you know, talks of June, but it didn't happen, so...
President Muhammadu Buhari has congratulated Kamaru Usman on the successful defense of his title. Now to Kenya, where the Anti-Doping Agency of Kenya has launched an e-learning platform as it seeks to enhance education on banned substances during this period of COVID-19 pandemic. The e-learning platform is the first in Africa as Kenya sets the pace by being the first country on the continent to develop and launch a portal based on anti-doping e-learning education program. The Anti-Doping Agency of Kenya CEO Jephthah Iragut said the program was part of its strategy to maintain a dedicated and committed pursuit of global excellence in anti-doping education and training.
We are sure that anti-doping curriculum will be mainstreamed into both the legal side and also in our education. And in particular, as we target the younger learners at the very early stages so that they are aware of anti-doping issues.
In the program, athletes as well as managers and coaches can access online studies on doping before being subjected to tests and thereafter issued course certifications. And now to football. The bidding process for the hosting rights of the Beach Soccer Africa Cup of Nations 2020 has been reopened to member associations. The 8-team final tournament has been scheduled to take place within the period of December 2020 and April 2021. The winner and losing finalists will qualify to represent Africa at the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup Russia 2021. Egyptian Football Association is reportedly in discussion to file a request with the Confederation of African Football to host the remaining games of the Champions League. Cameroon have declined to host the remaining games of the CAF Champions League after they were the closest candidate for the event. Reports in the Egyptian media confirmed that Egypt will request to host the games, especially after their success in hosting the Under-23 African Cup of Nations, as well as the continental tournaments in a senior level.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day.